This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, featuring the best of the best from today's conversations, observations, and ruminations, because great radio is still fresh the second time around. Earlier today on the Mac and Bone Show.
Our next guest, we're probably making him hungry right now, talking about food. He's just here to talk the draft, and I really want to talk a lot about the wide receivers. He wrote an amazing piece chronicling this awesome, deep wide receiver class. And I mean, he had long scouting reports for so many of these guys that we've been talking about the Panthers could take in the second round. He covers the NFL draft and college football and a lot of fantasy stuff out there. Fantasy Football Weekly, Fantasy Pros, Betting Pros. He is Thor Nystrom, and he joins us here on the Mac and Bone Show. Thor, what's going on, man? Seems like you've been obsessing over these wide receivers like we have.
I definitely have, and now you guys are making me obsessed about getting some breakfast this morning. I'm getting hungry, but good morning. How you guys doing?
It's the second guest we've done this to today. We have to stop making the guests hungry, Bob.
Yeah, and that was an hour ago, and somehow we're still talking about the same food.
We are food and wide receiver obsessed in this studio. We cannot deny it. Let's try to move to the wide receiver portion of this. I mean, you did your kind of scouting reports on each of these guys after watching a film and digging into advanced numbers. I thought it was an amazing piece. I'm going to retweet it again for the second time here this morning to make sure people check it out. Ladd McConkey is the one that has kind of become my favorite, and I could tell from the piece you like him a lot too. If the Panthers are lucky to, first of all, two part, do you think he'll be there at 33? And then secondly, what could the Panthers be getting if they did get him? What do you see in him at the next level?
Yeah, I think there's a shot right now in Vegas on the draft slot prop board. His over under is 34.5. Okay. I think that there's a better shot than the draft betting public and the sports books do that he goes above that. He slides into the late first round, but certainly that there is a shot that he is there at the top of the second round. When he has been available to me in the mock drafts, the two-round, three-round mock drafts that we do at work at Fantasy Pros with the Carolina Panthers pick at the top of the second round, I take him each and every single time. And the point that I make is I think that he is a tailor-made fit there. Obviously, with the trade for Deontay Johnson, this was talked a lot about in the media about how the Panthers were in particular looking for weapons for Bryce Young, where you were looking for guys that were going to get open. Didn't have a lot of that last season. Ladd McConkey gets open more than 7-Eleven, whether it's on the boundary or in the slot. And I think where he got undersold coming in, or not even undersold, it was just an unfair narrative. People just, were saying this is a slot guy. And I'm not going to get into the reasons why I think that they were saying he was just a slot guy. he played 80% of his snaps on the boundary during his career for Georgia, a team that two of the last three seasons won the national title. And by the way, would have gone back to the college football playoff last season to have a chance for a three-peat had they not lost at the last second to Alabama in the SEC title game. Ladd McConkey, and not only can he play on the boundary, 4-3 wheels as well. And again, the separation rate, you can keep it by the data. I'm not just talking by the tape. You can compare that, the PFF separation percentile, PFF separation percentile against single coverage in man. You can compare that favorably up against anyone. It's mid to high 90th percentile in all of those categories, including on the boundary. And again, at Georgia, during all the college football playoff runs over the last couple of years, so a guy that I think would greatly help out Carolina, and in particular what they are looking for.
We're talking to Thor Nystrom. He is on Twitter at ThorKU. He's with Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros. Go to the top of his Twitter page. He's got his big board with 500 player comparisons. It is a must look at if you're into the draft. Thor, the Panthers are getting heavily linked, and they have been throughout this entire process, to South Carolina, Xavier Leggett. What's your assessment of Leggett and the long-term potential he has potentially as a Carolina Panther?
I could definitely see that one too. I like a couple of the other fits more. If you have access to him at the top of the second, like we just talked about McConkey. Another one that I really like is Ricky Pearsall. Leggett, though, is one that I wouldn't argue with. I think he's around closer to like 50th on my board, but there are things about his game that I really like. I don't know that in Carolina's situation, I would prioritize him. I would like Leggett to go to a situation where you already have that sort of stud one banana on the other side, and Leggett can play off of him. Leggett's the guy who the measurables are all there. He's very, very good north to south, like in that big physical package. And the other thing I like about him, he has the fastball of going north to south in that 6 foot one, 225 pound muscled up frame of his. And then he is adept at slamming on the brakes and coming back, which is a really cool trick to have. You have the 98 mile per hour fastball, and then you have the changeup, 78 mile per hour Bugs Bunny, where you can come back. The rest of this stuff, he has those two things to work on. He showed some that he can do some in and out breaking route type stuff, but that's the stuff of his game that he is still going to be working on. But you have the two things the rest of your game is going to go off of. He just broke out last year, as you guys know, the 4 years before that at South Carolina. He was sort of this organizational soldier who was a special teams player on all the different units that they had, but he was not a big part of the wide receiver depth chart up until last season, where he did have the big breakout, and he is the fabulous athlete. But yeah, you have sort of that two-way utility. But like I said, I would like him in a spot where they already have the established alpha receiver, and then he can just sort of focus on his two utilities.
We're talking with Thor Nystrom. We are discussing this amazing NFL draft wide receiver group. He wrote a great piece about it, long form piece with big scouting reports. We're going to retweet it again so y'all can check it out. Fantasy Pros, Betting Pros. Thor, you mentioned Ricky Pearsall as someone that you also like for the Panthers. What sticks out with him, and why do you think he would be a good match here?
Ricky Pearsall is a guy, the last three seasons, he has been the wide receiver one for Jaden Daniels going back to Arizona State in 2021, then Anthony Richardson in 2022 at Florida, then Graham Mertz last season at Florida. And those weren't the greatest passing environments, despite there being two guys that are going to go in the top five on that list. Jaden Daniels wasn't throwing the best in that 2021 season at Arizona State, and then even though Richardson did go on to go in the top five, the accuracy wasn't the best. And so some of the counting stats with Ricky Pearsall, they haven't been the greatest, but he is an awesome route runner, and he might have the best set of hands that we've seen these past couple years, certainly with the stuff within his kitchen, but the highlight reel catches are absolutely ridiculous with Ricky Pearsall. And then in addition to that, he proved that he is an absolutely insane athlete, tested as a 99th percentile athlete in Indianapolis, both with he had the speed. Then he had a 42.5-inch vertical as well. So he just showed all the different stuff with that. And like I said, the mechanics of his game, the attention to detail, everything like that. He has proved the concept with everything throughout the pre-draft process. Had a very good Senior Bowl as well. So he's a guy who is going to go very early, I think, on Friday night.
Thor, who's an underrated wideout, whether it's via the Vegas odds or just your assessment, who's an underrated wide receiver prospect in this draft that might not be getting the attention he deserves?
I'll toss out a couple for you guys. One that'll go on day two, one, and then a couple that'll go on day three. One that'll go on day two, I think is underrated, is Javon Baker. And then a couple on day three, Luke McCaffrey, I think is super underrated. And then another one going deeper on day three that I think is super underrated is Jalen Coker, an FCS kid coming up that I think people are sleeping on. That I know one of your local favorites, like Mr. Steve Smith, I'm in agreement with him on Coker.
And okay, he's on him too. Very interesting. I want to ask you about Keon Coleman. He has been so polarizing within our fan base. There are some people that look at him and, man, I've seen those highlight, catches going up in the air over top of somebody. That's what we need. And then there's a lot of folks that are worried, hey, is he fast enough? Is he going to separate enough? What do you think about Keon Coleman?
It's so tough because the guy with that profile, invariably he goes in the second round every single year. And we have seen it work like aces in the NFL. T. Higgins and the guy I compare him to, Cortland Sutton, are two great examples of this. And we have seen it not work to embarrassing effect in the NFL. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside would be a great example of that. And you see it both ways with Keon Coleman last year. You saw it both ways with him during the season. At the beginning of the season, Keon Coleman was the stud in huge spots. Right away, he was shredding LSU right out the gate. And it's like, oh, my gosh, here we go. Because he'd come over from Michigan State, and right away, Florida State had that primetime game. He rips up LSU. Then they go and play Clemson. He rips them up, too. And it's like, wow, he is that guy that we thought he was going to be. He's going to be a mid-first-round pick. And then all of a sudden, the situation starts to go the other way. Enough so we're at the end of the season in November, it started to get really bad where it was out of his hands. First, Keon Coleman gets hurt at the beginning of November. Then Jordan Travis gets hurt. The whole situation goes the other way. Keon Coleman, he does have the 4.61 speed, and his game is not to get separation. What his game is, he's a former basketball player, played basketball actually with Tom Izzo when he was at Michigan State.
Yeah, true.
And he is the downtown rebounder guy with awesome ball skills. So that's what you're going to get out of him. You know, again, evoking the Cortland Sutton guy, evoking the T. Higgins guy. Will those ball skills play at the next level? That's what we're going to have to find out. I would certainly pay the ticket, though, in the second round to find out with a guy like that.
Thor, outside of Brock Bowers, what tight end do you like in this draft the most?
I would definitely take Ben Sinnott from Kansas State as the second tight end. For me, that is tight end two with a bullet. That's the guy that should go in the second round. I think some of those other tight ends are super overrated. The testing guys, Theo Johnson, I find super overrated. Jared Wiley, the kid from TCU, I think he's overrated. The kid that I think is underrated is Eric Hall from Iowa. The only reason that people sleep on him is because he got injured each of the last 2 years. Last year, his season ended early with an ACL injury. But he was at Michigan before, then Iowa last season, two tight end factories. At Michigan, they used him as an H-back, moved him around, and used him as a receiver. Last year at Iowa, he was the inline guy they used as the replacement for Sam Laporta. He was a fabulous receiver, showed the receiving utility at both spots, and is a great receiver. Last year, he had a 50-yard catch-and-run touchdown where he runs away from Kalen King to the end zone in the open field. Kalen King at the pro day ran a 4.51. I think if Eric Hall had a chance to test during the pre-draft process, he runs either in the very like a 4.5 flat or more probably in the high 4.4s, which would have made and he would have proven to be one of the most athletic tight ends in this class. But he didn't get that shot, and because he's coming off the medical stuff, he is going to get slept on in this class. And I think he's going to prove, assuming his body is up for it, to be one of the steals of this tight end class.
All right, man. Great stuff. And by the
incredible
way,
stuff.
Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State, like that's high praise for him. And that's a guy the Panthers have had a top 30 visit with. So that's good to hear that praise because I know they've got some interest in him. All right, man. Thor, great job. The piece, again, I retweeted it last week. I will retweet it again. We get off the air so you guys can see all these breakdowns because the man put a lot of work into it. This is a lot of work on these wide receivers that we are so consumed with, too. He is Thor Nystrom. Check him out. Fantasy Pros, Betting Pros, and on Twitter, at ThorKU on Twitter. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks so much, boys. Appreciate thanks you.
Listen to Mac and Bone every weekday morning from 6 to 10. Instant replay continues with more in a moment. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. This afternoon on the Wes and Walker Show.
Everybody got beef nowadays. We want to know what your favorite sports beef of all time is. It can even include some examples in the local area. In fact, we would recommend that. We would prefer that. 704-570-9610. That's the FanDuel text line. Lots of people writing in. I thought the funny ones were all about Smitty. Carolina Brink said, beef, Steve Smith and Roman Harper on the field.
Yeah, that was wild.
On the field, yes. And then I think they talked about that, if I'm not mistaken, and they've done some hits together, I think even with Kyle Bailey. So Roman Harper, Steve Smith, they're good now. But I of course, we remember the end zone incident. And what I had was something closer to what 704 wrote also here on the text line. Smitty versus every cornerback of all time. Ever. Ice up, son. Yeah, the names that I was just writing some of the cornerbacks down, and before I did any research whatsoever, it was Jack Rabbit, Janoris Jenkins, Fred Smoot.
Yeah.
Aqib Talib. Those are the three I just bang, 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 wrote it down, immediately came to mind. And it's true. And what I love about Smitty is that he had beef with everybody he played against, and he won. He won those battles every time. And in fact, I love, wasn't it Smitty said he ended Fred Smoot's career? I mean, just even after, you talk about diss tracks, just bars from Smitty against Fred Smoot, I ended his career. And then you go back and you're like, oh man, it did kind of coincide with your play.
Yeah, he had the best beef battles along with Ocho Cinco having the hit list. Those two guys had it in the most with opposing corners each and every week.
So this is if we want to make the rapper parallel
here. Can't forget about D'Angelo Hall as well.
Oh, that's... Yes.
Yeah, man.
Yes, absolutely deserves to be atop that list. When they hired D'Angelo Hall as a secondary coach, we all said, wait, well, is there anything weird with Steve Smith? It was so prevalent. Like, we thought about that so much. We had that question. If we want to make the rapper parallel here, though, when you talk about rapper beef, it's always like, okay, how much do these rappers truly hate each other? Mm-hmm. Is it going to get nasty? And is it all just fun and games? Competing for competition's sake, or no, do they really hate you? Mm-hmm. And it means something different to them. And it feels like Jay-Z and Nas come to mind because everybody wants to say Ether is the best diss track ever, or at least top five, whatever, right?
Right.
That's a different debate. But it would, Nas did not want Jay-Z to win that.
No.
He did not like that man. And it was for Jay-Z. He didn't really care if that was an audience for everybody else. That's kind of how Smitty approached everybody. No, you guys don't understand. He doesn't like you. He doesn't know you maybe all that well, but he doesn't like you. And you're going to lose this battle. And that's why Smitty is the best.
Yeah, man. And I mean, you're playing a sport where you get to actually put hands on him. That's the thing that football coaches always say. We get to do stuff out here that you would get arrested for in the real world. And so, yeah, if I got a problem with a guy, I get to see him on Sunday and I get to be physical with him. It's not like, oh, you know, a rapper sees a guy out somewhere and they get into a fight. There might be some arrests or some things, citations given out, whatever you want to say. But on the football field, I can do these things to you and nobody's going to have an issue with it as long as it's legal.
Sardine Water has a great one. OBJ versus Josh Norman.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Excellent battle where both of them got their licks in. I mean, I think there was a touchdown catch on Josh Norman, but it felt like Norman also had a couple of nice cover plays. Jeremy has Julius Hodge versus Chris Paul. Still going. Still going.
Yeah, man.
Julius Hodge can't stand that guy on Twitter, and it's funny to see Julius tweet about Chris Paul every single time.
Maybe a 336 number said Dean Smith versus Rick Barnes back in the day when Barnes was at Clemson. Do you agree with that?
There's something about Clemson coaches trying to try Carolina coaches because Barnes did it. That's why he ran off to Texas and underachieved for 15 years. And Brad Brownell did it with Roy Williams in 2017. And it's always good seeing those guys fail because you don't question the godfathers of college basketball.
Well, and also, Fitty, like we were talking about with Smitty and all these corners they faced, Rick Barnes was the other corner, always losing. It was a pretty one-sided beef between Dean Smith and Rick Barnes.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know he's a local, but I mean, like, imagine at every turn you're just the biggest loser. And that's been Rick Barnes' career as a college head basketball coach.
Still some beef between you and Rick Barnes a little bit?
I mean, you're talking about at Texas, he owned Roy Williams. And yeah, that was something that, you know, true. He would brag about, but couldn't get to the Final Four, can't win national championships. And, you know, that's ultimately what matters, not winning non-conference games in December.
Right. That's right. Hit Stick Mike
said. Okay, well, I'll remember that the next time y'all win a big non-conference game. I'll remember that it doesn't matter.
You told me when y'all win a big conference game.
Okay, well, you can have your little snippy comments all you want, but you was up on here talking about having a moral victory against UConn. So, you know, let me know which one. Does it matter or does it not?
Fitty's got some spice today.
Right.
It feels like there's some spice here. Like, Fitty was almost like he was, you know, he was roping up cattle when he was telling me the wrap it up sign. I thought he was about to hog tie me. It's like, goodness gracious. Man, we'll get to break, and then he's got some snippy comments for you. I'm ready to go. Fitty is about to be in the game, just like Drake, just like KDOT, all these guys. I have a few. I'm going to get through some of my examples, and then we can go to some wide receiver rankings. Purple shirt guy versus Dwayne Wade, another one-sided affair. Fans versus Michael Vick. Panthers fan. I mean, just Michael Vick killed us. That was tough. Yeah. And Michael Vick, that was tough. I don't know if that one's necessary. We just couldn't stand watching Michael Vick take it to the Panthers. So that's why I put him on there. But I don't know how much like real beef there was. But
oh,
I, know
I
we
think
didn't
it
like
was.
Him.
Okay, because that so. Was back in the day when I was a Panthers fan like yeah. that, man. But Michael Vick, when he played against your team, he would drive you insane.
Yeah,
because you'd have him dead to rights. And then he'd break out for a 30, 40-yard gain. And now those are just the worst type of guys to go against.
Mike Carey and Panthers fan / Jericho Cotchery. That's one.
Okay.
He caught it. #
Panther fans versus John Casey. It.
Yeah, at least for a moment. And that's unfortunate. That's a beef I don't like. I don't celebrate that one. Not at all. Because poor Casey. He was great for Carolina and then had the one moment. Tyler Hansbrough versus Gerald Henderson.
Oh, yeah.
Got that
that's
one.
A good one. Thank Carolina, Duke, you could go a bunch.
There are, but that's the one that came up to my mind first and foremost. And then also have Coach K and Dylan Brooks. Have that. Remember okay. when he said, "Don't shoot the last shot." It was in the tournament. Oregon beat him. Coach K was getting sour. He was being
that one jogged
loser.
My memory. Yeah. I did not remember that.
Yeah, that's when I knew. I was like, yeah, everybody. I turned it up a little bit against Coach K after that. It's like, what are you doing talking to Dylan Brooks? Now Dylan Brooks is the villain to everybody.
He is,
but certainly to Coach K back then. All right, because wide receiver is so much in the conversation with Carolina selecting at 33. And 39, I thought that would be the first position for draft week that we rank, and we can go 1 through 5, 1 through 3, just talk about our favorite guys at the position. And so I have rankings here. Wes, you want me to read my rankings?
Yes.
And then you can comment on
so.
Them? All right. So I have some, I guess, like weird enough rules to where there are a few receivers I don't think are going to be there, so I didn't include them. I mean,
yeah, I was saying some of the top guys we'd have to leave out. I would
right, top three, it's not happening. That's Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze. It feels like maybe we could rank everybody else. I didn't Brian Thomas. I did A.D. Mitchell, and maybe I'm not being consistent, but that's how I rolled here with these rankings. So, Wes, I have Xavier Worthy number one. I do. And it was really tough. I had a really hard time with these rankings. I love all of them. Like I'm here for it. If you want to take a chance on them, I got Xavier Worthy number one. If you have that crazy of a 40 time, if you're that athletic, you're that productive. I don't think the only way you win is just go routes downfield.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can win in other ways. I think I trust this team, Dave Canales. And look, a coaching staff worth their salt to me can manufacture touches or design an offense where Worthy can be successful. And then if you're giving me this elite, elite trait, a trait that matters in the NFL, I'll put Worthy at number one. I have McConkey at two. It feels like he is one of the, in this area of the draft, it feels like McConkey is one of the bigger fail safes. It doesn't feel like there's a world where he absolutely is a huge bust. It feels like, and now we want him to realize his top end potential, but every article you read about him, all the draft pundits, the guys that I trust, they really like him, Wes. And it feels like even if he doesn't reach that ceiling, Ladd McConkey is number two because it just feels like there's a floor that is going to hit. And then I'll stop at three. I got a couple of other ones, but this is where I put A.D. Mitchell. A.D. Mitchell, the lack of production, the lack of dominance at Texas, it scares me a little bit. Mm-hmm. So when Xavier Worthy set the record for the 40 time, everybody was going crazy with that. It felt like one of the stories here was A.D. Mitchell running his 40 in the 4.3s at that size. So that's something I would be totally fine with taking a chance on an A.D. Mitchell if he falls. I don't think he will, but there's been enough there where I felt like we could include him in the rankings. So A.D. Mitchell is number three. It just feels like there's the dog in him questions.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've gotten older evaluating the NFL draft process, like an NBA draft process, it feels like that kind of matters with some of these guys. And if talking about just going up and catching the ball at its highest point, you know, going after it, catching it in traffic. Wes, those are my top three, but I have some questions with A.D. Mitchell as to why he falls from number one to number three. So those are my top three. What you think about him?
I do love him. And I had a tough time at the top of my rankings because you know that I love Worthy and what he could bring as far as taking the top off of defense, that Tyreek Hill effect to where he really makes defenses, puts them on high alert. Now, I'm not saying this kid's going to be Tyreek Hill by any stretch of the imagination, but there are some similarities. And when you look at the speed that he's got going there and just what he can do to a defense as far as dictating coverage and how many guys are down in the box. The only thing that worries me about him is those receiving grades that he had at Texas. He started out strong with a 79, but then went down each year to a 69.8, 68.9. Now, that does make me put him number two in this discussion because the speed, and I feel like he can be coached up. There's no law that says he can't coached up. There's no receiver or no player that comes into the NFL a finished product. So if you give me that type of canvas to work with, a guy that ran a 4.21, a guy that was productive throughout his three seasons in college, yeah, I can work with that, and let's see what he can do. But Ladd McConkey, to me, is just the most trustworthy guy out of the bunch.
That's the better word to say.
Yeah. He's the guy that I know when I get him in there. Keep the guy healthy, obviously, with any of these guys, but I know that he's a guy that's going to come in there and be ready to go from day one. It's not going to take a ton of coaching. He comes from a great pedigree program. He's a team guy because he stayed there no matter what, because this is a guy that if McConkey had gone to a more high-flying system, he could have put up crazy numbers as well, but he stayed at a run-first offense in Georgia.
He got hurt.
One of our favorite topics. I know at Georgia, you're not going to get on the field if you can't block because they're going to run the football, so I know I got a guy.
No, he's good. No, but it's funny. We got into the debate, though, but like that's been a celebrated thing about him.
Yeah, I know he's going right to be tough.
It's an attribute with McConkey's
game. That's what I'm saying. I know this is a guy that's going to come in and be a tough guy. He's a team guy. You know, he had the highest separation percentage versus single coverage of a lot of the receivers that we're talking about. 92nd percentile in yards per route run, and he had the second highest open target percentage, man. So give me a guy like Ladd McConkey that I can trust. He strikes me also as a very smart football player that's going to come in and absorb the playbook immediately. He's going to get open. He's going to block. I think he's a complete receiver, ready to step in day one. So I have him number one. And then my number three guy, you know, Leggett, the potential that's there with him. That size, you like it at almost 220 pounds. We know he can run. We know he can move. And he seems to just have a hunger within him. And the production that he put up in South Carolina, played with a pro NFL quarterback in Spencer Rattler. So I think there are a lot of things there. And I think this is a guy that maybe is starting to reach his potential. I think there's a lot left there when you look at the fact that the production the first two seasons wasn't necessarily there, but now something clicked within him.
The first four.
That's what I'm saying.
It was a long time.
Yeah, so is it going to continue to click once he gets in the NFL and I can take this blank canvas again with all that he's bringing to the table and turn him into a ball player?
Leggett is one of those guys that I either have at two, possibly even one, and I have him number four on my list. Would not be, he'd be three if we didn't include A.D. Mitchell, and that's kind of been a later development. Mm-hmm. We had Lightning Alex say, hey, what about Xavier Leggett? I was watching some clips and starting to dig a little bit deeper on him. Underdog Fantasy, they do a great job. Josh Norris, Hayden Winks, they've been breaking down these wide receiver profiles on YouTube. It's been excellent. They have their nerd corner. They watch tape. They talk about a whole bunch of different stuff. It's been fun to watch their profiles on all these pass catchers. And when they get to Leggett, they say, well, look, what's funny about Leggett and his NFL comp is there is some Deebo Samuel in his game where it's not even just trying to do the South Carolina thing. Mm-hmm. It's they manufacture a lot of touches for him. He also can win downfield, not so much in the intermediate area, but it feels like Josh Norris talked about maybe a Rashee Rice type of growth plan for him with Kansas City. You manufacture a lot of touches at the line of scrimmage, let him rack up on the yak yards, which he, I think, averaged like 6 yards after the catch per target or catch, which is ridiculous. And then on top of him having a high ADOT, like he wins downfield too. So if you have him manufacture touches at the beginning and then slowly start to win downfield more, just bring him along the right way. Basically, do you trust your coaching enough to get him right on the football field? Yeah. Rashee Rice, maybe not off the football field.
I was about
field.
To say, I hope he drives better. I
saw you smiling. I saw you smiling. And I knew exactly what it was.
Is that your fourth? Is that your fourth guy?
Yes, it is. And then Ricky Pearsall, I like a lot. Number
okay,
five.
Yeah, I like Pearsall as well, like you do. But I would go Brian Thomas. I mean, that LSU pedigree, hard to turn down.
I didn't include him, but yeah. I probably was a little inconsistent in including A.D. Mitchell and not including
okay.
Thomas.
And then I went Troy Franklin from Oregon. There's a lot to like. I like guys that produce, man.
Yeah.
And you talk about 2022, 61 balls, 891 yards, 9 touchdowns. Followed that up, 81, 13, 83, 14 touchdowns. And we know that Oregon system, man. It definitely allows for space with the pace that they go and the way that they play the game. But you look at it, man, there's a lot to like with him. Now, the weight is a little low to be 6'2". I mean, 176 pounds.
He's tiny.
But other than that, you know, I'll take the 6'2 size with the 4.41 speed, 39-inch vert. 10-4 broad. I mean, there's a lot there with this kid to put up the production that he did. So I would put him as my five. I would be okay with the Panthers selecting any one of these gentlemen.
We have some Dane Brugler sound I want to get to maybe later, because he talks about Ladd McConkey's ceiling, which is the thing I'm trying to figure out what it is. We've heard some Antonio Brown comps, too, including one from Brugler and then Mike Renner when he was on the Mina Kimes podcast. And then also, we've seen some, okay, we trust him. We know he's going to be good, but do we have that high-end ceiling like maybe a Xavier Leggett could have, or some of these more athletic freaks that are a little bit taller, because McConkey is on the shorter side compared to these others. He's not, you know, crazy tiny. He's like 5'11", 5'10". But I am interested if you and I both seem to have a big consensus on him and Xavier Worthy, but McConkey is somebody that we feel very good is going to come in and produce. I do wonder about that ceiling. We can get to that a little bit later on.
You can hear Wes and Walker live and local every weekday afternoon from noon to 3. Sit tight and stay locked, because Instant Replay continues next, only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Earlier this afternoon on the Kyle Bailey Show.
We welcome in our buddy Hunter Bailey. He covers the Hornets for the Charlotte Post, the 49ers for the Charlotte Observer. He's back with us here in studio on a Monday. What's up, buddy? How you been?
Good, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Great. What's the best party scene you've ever experienced in sports?
Ooh, my brain goes straight to like 04, 08 Talladega, when Dale Jr. is winning pretty much every time.
Oh, yeah?
Go down a couple times, yeah.
Look at you. So you know the power of Talladega.
I was young, but it was a different time, man. You know what's going on
here. Did you see the videos of the infield from over the weekend?
How could you miss it?
How could you miss the, yeah, how could you? So, I mean, you know what the true party scene of Talladega looks like.
For sure.
Best college tailgate you've ever been to? Which one?
Oof, not at UNC Charlotte. Sorry, Charlotte fans. It was not there.
All right, so you got to throw a shot up front. All right, I hear you. All right, now they had the spring game this weekend, and the first thing you said when you walked in here, and I saw it over the, I didn't see the game live or anything, but I saw the reports, and it was like, I don't think they've run the ball once today. And it turns out, you're right, that's actually the case, right?
Not a single time, man. Biff wearing the run the dang ball hat, throws the ball every single time. It was good to kind of see, because that was the issue last year, right? You got split starters at quarterback, 6 touchdowns to 17 picks the whole year. You needed to see something with the quarterbacks to feel better about this team, and you got to see Max Brown from Florida, Deshaun Purdy, who's a true freshman, and you feel good about what you saw, but at the same time, I think there's a little bit going on here, like you don't want to show too much, because I cannot foresee a Biff Poggi team throwing the ball more than 70% of the time.
So that was strictly, hey, let's go get some work on the passing game.
Definitely. He said it was a blitz pickup scrimmage. That was the idea. Little to no mix up in coverages on the defense, a lot of 4 verticals on offense. So yeah, that was, let's see some jump balls. Let's try and see some fun stuff, get the fans involved, because they missed that aspect completely a year ago.
Oh, they did. And that's what I mean. You come out of last year, the defense gave them a lot of opportunities at times to win games. There were times they couldn't score. So it's not a shock that he wants to get this right. But where's your level of optimism that all of a sudden the passing game is going to turn into something prolific?
I feel good about what they have as far as some of these new guys, these new wideouts. Isaiah Myers coming from Independence Community College, 6'5". He's a bigger body guy. That's what they missed last year, 50-50 balls. I think he'll be that guy. They just got Corey Dutchess from Maryland, who honestly was a tight end at Maryland. He's a problem. He's going to be a really good receiver here. Mm-hmm. He's switching, probably will play the X or the Y in this offense. And you like what you see from Max Brown. Everyone keeps talking about his leadership. He's mobile. That's going to be the big thing. Is he didn't really show that in the spring because, you know, these quarterbacks aren't really getting hit. They're all in the red jerseys. But I think he's going to be a real dual threat quarterback for them, and they're going to need that. And it's just overall, how do you turn the page from 3-9 last year? You won one home game last year, and that was against South Carolina State in the opener. How can you bring fun back to Jerry Richardson Stadium, and how can you bring elite tailgating to Jerry Richardson Stadium?
Well, and look, I mean, you got to bring the you got to win to bring the people, right? For, there are some sure. loyal, devoted, diehard 49ers fans. They're on my text line all the time. But you got to give people a reason to come out and spend their money and, you know, come out and fire up the grill at 6:30 in the morning to get ready for a noon kick and things like that. And I think Biff brought that initial punch of optimism and attitude. I mean, hell, he was on this show a year ago asking for more money. And, you know, he's not a shy guy. He's a very brash human being. And I think folks are looking for him to back that up. And one thing that, you know, is really important, at least I think anyway on paper, is the fact that he added Tim Brewster. Yep. Right, he added Dre Bly. Yep. Those are clearly recruiting moves. It's not to speak of their coaching acumen, but those are clearly recruiting moves. But in this day and age of college football, you need an NIL fund, yep. or you need to be able to pay guys to keep them on your squad. So, I mean, just talk about that a bit. The portal additions that they've made, but also the additions to the coaching staff that are supposed to pay off in recruiting. But how much of any of that does it matter if you can't pay to keep your guys around?
Definitely, I think. I mean, you mentioned Dre Bly, like that's College Football Hall of Famer. Like, there's a certain level of respect that a guy like he comes with, and knowing the area. That's funny. So Brewster and Bly, Brewster actually coached Bly back in the day. They worked together at Carolina. They understand the recruiting landscape. And Bly was, Brewster was asked post game, does this feel like your last stop at Colorado as far as the way they're using the portal? And while there are some similarities and some very clear differences, the similarity is this, is you've got to recruit the Carolinas, and the NIL collective part is huge. I mean, you're talking about Biff Poggi, multimillionaire hedge fund manager. You got to think there's some optimism there for him, as well as the Charlotte community itself. But it's really, can you continue to bring guys in? And we got players that I talked to over the weekend saying they came to Charlotte to play with Max Brown. You love to hear some stuff like that, talking about a Florida transfer quarterback. This is why people are coming to play with a talent like that. You feel really good about that if you're the Charlotte 49er faithful.
You'd have to. Hunter Bailey in studio with us here, talking 49ers, talking Hornets. Real quick on the 49ers before we get to some Hornets stuff. Last we spoke to you, basketball had suffered a couple of, you know, pretty important, significant outgoing transfers. Aaron Fern, like everybody else in this business right now, is trying to make sure he's got a roster in place for next season. What's that looking like right now?
He's working, man. They've already added a couple. He's going to come on our podcast next week to talk some about what that offseason is like, what that NIL is like, because the collective for hoops, right? You've got guys like DeSean Jackson going to Iowa State. He was the only player on NIL. Charlotte had one of the least, like, profitable, or least, I don't even know the right word, but fruitful NIL funds last year. They're continuing to build that. They're getting guys like Nick Graves back. They're getting Lakai Patterson back. And they've got a couple more on the way. So you feel good about what's going on. Clearly, Patterson is going to be that lead dog next year. How do you build the team around him? And I think Fern, he showed it last year. Even with losing two or three of your big pieces, you can make a contender in the American. And because every single team in this league is dealing with the same thing.
Igor Milicic, we thought maybe going back to UVA, but it sounds like they're not in his final three, right?
I think he's going to end up with Tennessee. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm going to Rick Barnes, man. That's
It'd be a good fit for him.
Yeah,
for sure. That'd be a really good fit for him. All right.
Dalton Connect. Go there and try and make a difference just like that.
I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot. All right, so let's talk basketball for a second. I already asked you about the Trae Young rumor. Do we need to dignify that within any conversation?
No.
Okay, good. All right, we can leave that alone. There's another report out there that, once again, the Detroit Pistons might be trying to prioritize Miles Bridges this summer. For those that don't know, the Hornets, in re-signing him to the one-year deal, they kept his bird rights so they can still pay Miles more than anybody else. But apparently the Pistons are going to make another run at Miles Bridges. What do you make of this?
Miles has reiterated in person, like to all the cameras, to me individually, multiple people, he wants to be a Charlotte Hornet. He continues to say that. He feels like this is where his home is. This is the team that gave him the opportunity, the team that came back from everything he dealt with, everything involved with that over the past 2 years. This is where he wants to be. I think Detroit, I mean, it would make sense for the Pistons to go after a 3-and-D wing, something similar like that, someone who can create their own shot. But at the same time, I think he fits so key in what Charlotte is trying to do at that 3-4 tweener position. They're going to keep him here, man. And like I said, all that they've talked about both sides is how can we get a deal done? And I don't think they're that far apart at this point.
And it helps that you've got Brandon Miller still on his rookie contract, Mark Williams still on his rookie deal. You know, I don't think there's any urgency to, I mean, you're probably already looking at, you know, Brandon Miller's rookie extension at some point, because it's not going to be that far away. But I don't think Mark Williams is one that you're looking too hard at with that right now. So you've got some money to play with. I think he makes them better. There will be a lot of people who say, oh, let him go to Detroit. I don't think that's in their plans.
Yeah. I mean, he was he almost got traded. He was in the rumors. I mean, there was a lot of stuff with Phoenix back and forth, couple picks, couple players. They had prioritized keeping him here at the end of the day. I don't think they're going to let a team like Detroit come in and take him away at this point.
All right. Well, the Hornets aren't playing in the playoffs.
Nah.
But they do have a big draft selection to decide on coming up. Now, did we get the coin flip happen, by the way? Or when is that coin flip, Smoke? Do you know?
I heard nothing of it.
Okay. You know the coin flip between Charlotte and Portland?
I've heard about it. I thought it was supposed to be announced today.
Is it today?
I'm not sure.
All right, we'll double check it during the break. But because, you know, the Hornets and the Trailblazers tied in the standings, they're going to flip a coin to see who gets slightly better odds for the number one overall pick. It's going to be minuscule, like nearly negligible, so it won't matter that much. But, you know, there's still a very real possibility they end up with the number one overall pick, you know, or 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood. I guess I'm seeing Alex Saar as something of a consensus number one overall pick, but this kid, Zachary Resacher, I'm probably butchering the name out of back-to-back Frenchman apparently going off the top of the draft. Any of these guys that you love, or do you think maybe they're better off looking to trade this pick for a veteran?
So I spent a lot of time the past couple weeks looking at this because you're right, Hornets season is over, and I'm watching guys like Ant Edwards get in the face of Kevin Durant and say, this is my time, and I just, all I can think about is Brandon Miller doing that in 2 to 3 years. So what piece they need to pair with these guys, give me Cody Williams out of Colorado.
Mm.
I think he'll be there in that 5 to 7 range, which Hornets' most likely pick would be 6 right now, the highest percentage. Obviously, the lottery odds are really weird. They could really end up anywhere in there. Brother of the Thunder's Jalen Williams. He doesn't really shoot the ball a ton. He did shoot 41% from 3, but it's on a very low clip. But 6'8", 7'1 wingspan, great defender. Puts you right there in that 3 to 4 range. That's who I would take with the pick if it's there. Is he going to be that necessarily elite offensive player off the rip? No. He moves well without the ball. We talk about Brandon Miller needing the ball. Now you talk about LaMelo. Someone that can throw bodies at guys like Jason Tatum, Giannis Antetokounmpo. They need a wing, another wing that can really make that type of thing. Because you look at all these NBA playoff teams. Think about the Pelicans right now, the Thunder right now. 6'8 wings that can put the ball in the hole and play good defense. That's what this team needs to keep building around because you feel really good about Mark Williams. At least I do, obviously, getting back on the court.
But you do?
Yes.
I'm still worried about it. I got to be real. I'm still worried about it. Now, this is not a criticism of you, but I just checked Kyle Boone's latest mock from 16 minutes ago. He's got Cody Williams outside the lottery at 16.
I would take him there at 6 or 7.
So would you look to trade down then? Or because if you end up with the – because what are we talking about here?
Yeah.
They end up with what, the 3rd pick, 4th pick?
If you get that high, you might be looking at someone like Reed Blankenship. Or Reed Shepard.
Reed Shepard out of Kentucky. And I think this is kind of the issue with the draft. Yeah. You know, I see a lot of Hornets picking at 4 these days with – is it Nikola Topic or Topic? I forget. I don't know the exact –
I think it's Topic.
You know, 6'6 guard. I think a lot of the rationale I see for that one is people saying he's a great insurance policy to LaMelo Ball, but are you drafting a LaMelo insurance policy this year?
You're paying LaMelo $35 million next year.
Right.
And just signed the $260. I don't think you're looking for insurance on LaMelo yet. I think you might be looking to fill out – last year, remember, it was Scoot or Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
And that – the idea then was who fits better next to Melo. Why is that different now? You pick the best player there.
Yeah, I won't argue with that. Yeah. I won't argue with that. All right, NBA playoffs.
Yes, sir.
There's some good games. I thought, first of all, Oklahoma City, little drama. SGA gets the win with the big shot late. That was a fun game to watch. Even Knicks-Philadelphia, fun game to watch. Although I do find myself being annoyed by Joel Embiid more than ever and the treatment he gets from the officials. I loved the theatrics from Anthony Edwards, you know, in the game. They blasted the Suns. And then you got the Heat. Smoke's been giving them hell. What stood out to you from the weekend in the NBA playoffs?
Damian Lillard can still do it.
There's a lot of questions about him a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
And then he shows up.
I mean, he showed up in the first half. 35 in the first. And then I'm going to defer in the second. But it was good to see that he could still get it done, right?
Because,
I mean, you're 2 years without the playoffs. They've had an up and down year. They fired their coach at 30-13, and they didn't even get to 50 wins. That's just, you're talking about Milwaukee being an up and down team, doing that without Giannis against the Indiana Pacers team that didn't have a lot of playoff experience. Really fun first game for Dame Lillard. And then, I mean, just Dallas and LA, man.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great series. I think that goes 7, and I cannot foresee Luka not putting at least one dagger in the Clippers fans.
I think they do still end up winning the series. I'm looking at a couple of these right now. I just wish the Hornets were in some of these series.
Dude, just think about the environment here at Spectrum Center.
I know. That's it. That's what I want to see.
I keep, like, I'm watching the Oklahoma City game last night, and you see all the, just everyone's in the same color. The crowd pops when SGA hits a shot, and you're thinking about what could that be like here? Because, I mean, it's been, what, now 8 seasons.
It's also, yeah, it's also just so frustrating. Yeah, the Magic looked terrible on Saturday.
Yeah.
But they're in. Yeah. I mean, they went 50 games. The Thunder, number one seed in the West. Like, these are teams that were in the same neighborhood as the Hornets just 2 years ago.
Yep.
And now they're, you know, 50, 55 win basketball teams. And I know it's mostly injuries around here, but it's so maddening to watch that take place.
Yeah. And you look at teams like Orlando, they don't have a player like LaMelo Ball.
No.
Like they, I well, mean, they got obviously, Paolo Banchero, they have great players. Jonathan Isaac's a good defender. But they don't have, like, a star power player like that. They don't. They just don't have one on the roster. And you got to see him on the court, man.
No doubt. Hey, it was good to see you, buddy.
You too.
You tuned in to Instant Replay. When the audio was so good, it has to be heard again. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte Sports Fan.